You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right
here, right
now. Welcome to Latest United We Stand podcast. United are out of the FA Cup, having lost, been outplayed by Leicester City. 3-1, and that feels very, very disappointing. I thought the FA Cup was well worth winning this year. And I think there were a lot of concerns when the team was announced, with Bruno and Luke Shaw out. But that's not unusual for there to be concerns quite often. People who have the doubts are proved wrong, but not today, not against a team as good as that, a team who only a point behind United in the Premier League, got a very good manager, got some very good players, I think showed they dominated the midfield. I'm not going to be too long talking now, don't feel great to be honest, just felt rough today. And I've been on the road all week. I was in Madrid to watch them play against Atalanta and go through, and then I flew over to Milan. I had 3 days in Milan. Milan was in lockdown, so it was like going into a ghost city. I've done that quite a lot in the last year. So you end up filling out loads of paperwork, having loads of COVID tests. I had a COVID test on Monday at 5 p.m, Tuesday at 5:10, Tuesday at 7 p.m, and then I wasn't even needed to show it when I went into Italy. So, Italy was good. I did actually start this podcast walking away from the San Siro, but I got interrupted. I'll play that in just after this bit. And then the day of the Milan match, I literally had nowhere to go to. And normally I would, if I'm in Milan, I'd normally meet Nemanja Vidic, do an interview with him. I tried to interview Ashley Young, but I hadn't heard back from that. Everything was really complicated because the city was in lockdown. People can't meet people face to face. For the Milan game, well, it's a top result. And United through to Granada. You've got a fancy United against Granada. We don't know whether the game will be able to be played in Andalusia in Spain. At the moment, British teams are not allowed to go to Spain. So Spanish teams are disadvantaged, such as Real Sociedad in the Europa League. They had to move that game to Turin, where they got hammered. I'm sure they would have felt more comfortable at home. Granada have been a success story in recent years. They've come up from the second division. It's not a big football city. They've got a nice ground. It holds about 18,000. It's a really beautiful city. The manager was Unai Emery's number two at Sevilla. I actually met him a couple of years ago when I watched Sevilla's B team play. And he's very popular among Granada fans, mixture of local boys and players who've been brought in. That Granada even made it into Europe. It was a big, big success, and they're on the fringes to go into it again. So it'll be the biggest game in their history. They're not a team who plays in Europe, but there's a big but there, and the boys at Manchester United, A, might not even be coming to town, and B, there's almost certainly going to be no fans there. There was a little bit of talk in Spain about some fans being allowed back after Easter, but I think it's improbable. Rates are rising across Europe, though not yet in Spain, but we'll do Granada in more depth in the forthcoming weeks. In Milan, the United thought that Milan would press them harder, be more intense, and put more pressure on the defence than actually happened. United was set up for that. So United were pretty poor in the first half. Again, there's a lack of goals in the team. There's not a prolific striker. United have not had a prolific striker for a long time. And just when I was researching some previous Milan games, I was thinking, Crespo, you know, when did United last have a Crespo? Someone who scores so many. United's top scorer is Bruno, by a long way. But in San Siro, which is such an amazing stadium, even when it's empty, United prevailed. Paul Pogba came on, scored after 3 minutes. Really good goal combined with Bruno. Zlatan Ibrahimovic was all hot air. United easily contained him. The defence was excellent. Lindelof was excellent. Dean Henderson was good. You could hear him up in the stands. And went through against Milan. So United have knocked out AC Milan and Real Sociedad now. Two teams who would have been among the favourites to win the Europa League. Now, given that I'm speaking after Leicester, that Europa League to me becomes even more important, because I think it's, and I've maintained this throughout, United should try and win every competition they enter, be it League Cup, FA Cup, Europa League. Does make a difference. If fans were to be allowed back for a final in Gdansk, that would be a massive high to finish the season, although that seems quite fanciful at the moment. But why not hope? Why not be optimistic about the future? And going out the FA Cup, well, that was just a blow. Not starting with Bruno, with Luke Shaw. I do know that there's a feeling within the club that the squad is not strong enough to compete every 3 or 4 days to this level and be winning all the time. The squad isn't as strong as Manchester City's, which I think we all know. And Ollie's not the manager that Pep Guardiola is, which is an issue among United fans. I've always been supportive of Ollie. I've always maintained he's doing a good job. At some point, that's got to become a great job. And second place finish this season in the Europa League, I think that will be a successful season. But the FA Cup was another chance there. And when that draw was made at half-time against Southampton, you're thinking at least City can't knock United out of the FA Cup this year. But no, the second half performance at Leicester was as poor as the first half. The midfield was particularly static, not for the first time in recent weeks. Fred probably had his worst game in a United shirt. Nemanja Matic didn't add much. Harry Maguire was wobbly in defence. Dean Henderson conceded 3. Don't think he could have done much about any of them. Anthony Martial, alone and isolated up front, he's had a really poor season. And he didn't get much service, and he was very good in the derby a few weeks ago, but still, look at the figures. Mason Greenwood scored, he needed that, he's not been scoring enough. I think that was his first goal since Liverpool in the FA Cup. But frustrates me that knocking out Liverpool and overcoming Liverpool, although it sounds grander than the reality at the moment, it all comes to nothing because Leicester have knocked United out in the sixth round. So I think Ollie in cup competitions now, what it is, sixth round against Wolves in his first season, semi-final against Chelsea, sixth round against Leicester. There's a danger United is just becoming nearly men. I think it's clear that United need to strengthen again this summer. I spoke to Richard Arnold on my way back from Milan on Friday. It wasn't an in-depth interview, just 15 minutes talking about the sponsorship deal, and he gave quite a realistic appraisal of United having come through and still in tough financial times, but relative to other clubs are in a strong position. I think all fans want to know is who's coming in the summer, how much money will be available. But the team viewer sponsorship was definitely seen as a plus, slightly down on the Chevrolet one of last time. But then I remember at the time, even the most cynical United watchers were going, how on earth have Manchester United got that amount of money out of Chevrolet? So Arnold was also optimistic about fans coming back. Of course, he doesn't control that, but the signs are quite encouraging for next season, maybe even the end of this season. And we could have said maybe even for the FA Cup semi-final or the FA Cup final, but no, no, no. And it really disappoints me. I think the FA Cup is a very important thing in Manchester United's history. And it should be taken seriously. I don't get into hammering Ollie about his cup comments the other day. I don't think he meant them with the intention that cups are not worth winning. I think, look at the teams he's put out. I can remember being at Goodison in the Carabao quarter final and getting the lineup early, and the first reaction was that why is Bruno starting? You know, this is only the Carabao Cup. So he's played players throughout in cup competitions, and he's played slightly weaker teams. He's given Donny van de Beek started in every FA Cup game. Has he stood out? Not really. I thought he was pretty poor against Watford, against Leicester. He did bits, but nowhere near enough. I think there's a clamour for people to say give him chances, and that's fair enough because players deserve a run in the team, but it's chicken and egg. He's got to deliver when he gets a chance and doesn't stand out when he does get a chance. And I hear arguments rocking back and forward. He needs more time. Yeah, maybe he does. He's used to playing in a system. He's a system footballer. He's played in the Ajax system all the time. Okay, fine. But he doesn't play for him anymore. He plays for United. And at some point, he's got to stand out. Now, Frenkie de Jong, who also played for Ajax, he joined Barca and he had a pretty poor season. And he's become one of Barca's best players in his second season. So maybe we can hope for that. It's probably a better example than saying Fred, who had a bad poor season and then was much better in his second. Because Fred against Leicester was a bit of a horror show. As bad as Fred against PSG. So I'll lead you into the original start of this podcast. Slight disruption. And shame I couldn't get any of the colour in Milan and the noise because there wasn't much. And then into a deeper chat, which I found interesting. In a flat very close to San Siro, just ahead of the game. I'll be back and do another podcast next week. It's international week now, isn't it? Oh no, I hope there's not a hangover now for two international weeks, because United's game before it has been a poor one, but I fear that may be the case. Just leaving San Siro. AC Milan 0, Manchester United 1. That's a cracking scoreline by any stretch. Manchester United are through to the last eight of the Europa League. Some pricks coming past on a moped. Fucking knobhead. And apologies for my French. One goal scored by Paul Pogba. Jesus, what's all happening here? Harry's. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with overpriced razors, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they brought their own factory in Germany, and that's been making blades for over 100 years. They've now released their sharpest ever blades and added a new lubricating strip for an even closer, more comfortable shave. The best part? Replacement blades are still as little as £1.75 each. Harry's support great causes too. To give 1% of their global sales to non-profit organisations that provide mental health care to men in need. Do you want to give Harry's a go? Start your subscription with a trial set which includes a weighted ergonomic handle, their new 5-blade razor cartridge, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover to protect your blades on the move. And for a limited time, if you go direct to harrys.com/United, you'll also receive a free travel-sized shower gel. All of this is worth £14.50, but you'll pay just £4.95. So get the comfortable shave that you deserve. Head to harrys.com/United to claim a trial set for just £4.95. You'll also be supporting our podcast by doing so. Again, head to harrys.com/United today. Welcome to the Latest United We Stand podcast. I'm in Milan. I'm at my friend Alexio's apartment, which is quite close to San Siro in the west of the city. And, well, it was a beautiful sunny day yesterday. And today it's just started raining as I arrived.
I've not got much further to go now to go to the game in an empty stadium, in the best stadium in the world from the outside. I'm sick of myself saying that now, but I stand by it. I don't think there'll be any other British journalists here because of the quarantine issue. Manchester United against AC Milan. And it's a big match. It's a big story, whatever happens here. United going through will be a big plus because it's a big test, this match. And United going out will be a big story as well. But I've come to visit Alexio. I've known him for a long time. He's had a season ticket in San Siro since 1986. It cost him about €350 a year. He's seen the best in the world and he's seen some of the worst in the world. He's got various tattoos and one of them is, if you just show me, Herbert Kilpin. He's the man from Nottingham who founded AC Milan. And welcome to joining us again. I know we spoke a few weeks ago on the podcast, but I feel like I want to ask you some more questions, having visited you at home and seen the thing from your seat from the 2003 Champions League final when you were in Old Trafford. You've written a book on Zlatan. You've got a big picture in your flat of the Curva, and you remember that Curva for many years. You've travelled home and away with Milan for years and years. And I'm just describing some of the other things that I can see. Who's that scoring the penalty at Old Trafford? Is that Shevchenko?
Yeah, he was.
And it's signed.
So, yeah, that's Sheva's sign and also Gattuso's sign.
And these guys are heroes to you, Shevchenko and Gattuso.
Sure, you know, Shevchenko mainly because gave us the biggest moment of happiness in our life, I guess. I mean, serious issues, serious things in life are other stuff. I mean, children, your family and so on. But talking about silly and moments of joy in life related to football, for sure that was our biggest moments of joy in life. When Shevchenko scored that penalty, it was not just winning the Champions League, but it was beating Juventus, which is mainly obviously one of our greatest enemy. But remember, before we beat Inter. So it was like, you know, the perfect.
So you've knocked Inter out and then you've knocked Juventus out. So if you say the word Manchester to AC Milan fans, it tends to mean 2003.
Sure. Paying all the respect to the great Man United, but if you say the word Manchester, we think about 2003 for sure.
You've got a brilliant vinyl collection in your house.
Thank you.
including many British bands and the Stone Roses. What's the picture next to Shevchenko? Is that Maldini on the floor?
The guy with the blood on the shirt? No, that was Combin. Nestor Combin, who was a French Argentinian football player. When we played against Estudiantes from La Plata, you remember in that years you played first leg here and then you play in South America. We won here like 3-0, and there it was like just, you know, I mean, it was like a fighting. Yeah. And the guy was born in Argentina, then he moved to France, and it was all, you know, chased all the game by all the Argentinian players.
Wow.
And beaten. And that picture is quite a famous picture in AC Milan history.
So I've not seen this picture before, but he's covered in blood.
Yeah,
so this is from the game in La Plata.
You know what? After the game, the Argentinian police took him because they say he didn't serve the country in the army, and the club was ready to take the flight to get him back to Milan.
Really?
And they waited for him and called the embassy because he was in prison.
Which year was this?
It was 1969.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I never knew this.
And we wrote a book about it called The Heroes from Bombonera, because you know that, you know, from Estudiantes is playing in La Plata, but that game they played in Bombonera because it was bigger.
I've been to La Plata twice to see Juan Sebastian Verón.
See Estudiantes?
Yeah, I've seen Estudiantes and I've seen Boca.
The father from Verón played that game.
He did. The witch. And now Estudiantes and La Plata has got a bigger stadium than the Bombonera, but we're going way too sidetracked here. Milan knocked Manchester United out in the semi-final to win in 69. Controversial game, so we're not going to talk too much about that because I'm really enjoying being here. But I didn't know that the military police nearly called up an Argentinian Milan player. So if they would have done, I mean, he would have fought in the Malvinas, the Falklands War against England in... And not England, the UK, and Allied forces in 1982. And then Zlatan, you've done this book on Zlatan. What does he mean to you? And what does him coming back mean to you?
You know, the book is not exactly about Zlatan. And as we talked before, AC Milan from 2012 really had this downshift era. And... it's like a circle. It started when Zlatan went away, and I hope is over when Zlatan getting back to us. So the book is about all the season, all this horrible season we spent without him, and we hope things are getting a little better since he's come back. We'll see this night how it's gonna be. Maybe he's playing not all the match. Maybe a part. And it means a lot because, you know, we had so many champions during the 80s and 90s and so on, from Baresi, Maldini, Van Basten, Gullit to Kaká. And maybe Zlatan with Thiago Silva was our last champion. And now we just got an older champion, Zlatan, and maybe we have also some really good players like Cassie and Donnarumma, our goalkeeper, but they're not really champion, because to be a champion you have to win something. Until if you don't win something, you're not a champion. So Zlatan represents, you know, it's like when you have a girlfriend in your high school and to whom you're in love with, and you met her some 10 years and you say, oh, we can still have together. You know, it's like something like that. You got that feeling, you know, that the kind of magic in the eyes, I hope. I don't know.
Everybody will be listening to this after the game, so we're not going to talk too much about the game, but are you confident of going through?
No, I'm not. I'm honest, I told you before, and I always be honest with that. I was very pleased about the way we play in Manchester. I was surprised, but I still think that Man United is stronger than us, honestly. And we have such a shit team tonight because we have so many players injured. We have, Rebic is out. Ibra is not starting from the beginning. Leao is not playing. Mandzukic is not playing. So we have like a striker is Castillejo, who is not even good where he's actually playing. Imagine playing as a striker. So it's not even fair. I mean, it would be a good game if we could play with our average team, you know what I mean? But we're not playing even with our best players. So, everything can happen in football, but I'm not confident at all.
I've been writing this week about a game in 2005, Manchester United, AC Milan, last 16. Crespo scored home and away, and years later I went to see Crespo in Modena, and he's like a really posh Italian guy. He's from an upper-class background, and he's very friendly. And he was the star of a Milan team where you can just name them all. They're just world-class players throughout. You're the best. You won it in 03. You got to the final in 05 in I forget which city was in. I forget who you played in 05. And then you won it again in 07. Mm-hmm. And that team of absolute world-class players. But that 05 game, the Curva unleashed, unfurled this huge banner, 80 metres long, I've got a devil in me. And then behind you had like 12,000 people holding up this big red, white and black red devil. You were in the Curva that day.
Yeah.
How did something like that get organised? And we had 10,500 people. It's actually the biggest ever away following for Manchester United in Europe. And we were at the other end. And I was marvelling at it. I was thinking, wow, I'd love to do something like this.
You know, it's the ultra culture. I mean, there is a good side and there's a bad side. The good side is when you have something like that. I mean, it gets a lot of organization behind this. It's not like you just the day before you start working to something like this weeks before. And
who does the artwork? There must be artists involved.
Yeah, we have someone who was. I mean, as you said, the artist guy in the curva who got idea and starting organizing, and it takes a lot of people working on it for many days, and that was one of the best we ever done, I guess, in the years of
curva. So you knew who this guy was?
Yeah, sure. The name was Pedro, which means Peter in English. And he was a wise guy. And when you think about someone come from the ultra culture, you might think about someone, you know, with the tattoos and bad looks and bad behavior. He was such a smart guy, really well educated, such a nice person. And then, unfortunately, he died in an accident. And he's such a, you know, I'm so sorry about that, because it was. It was so nice. And I got a memory about him because in 1993, we played in Ancona, which is a town in the middle of Italy. And I went to the station to take the train. And I was just a kid. I was like maybe 20 or 19. And I was like, please, I don't have the ticket. And so he said to me, it was one of the, I mean, the bosses of the curva, and he was like, okay, stay there, wait a minute. When all the people went away, he was like, okay, take. And I'm, you know, I'm happy about that, because that was last time Marco Van Basten scored for Milan. It was the last time I saw last game Van Basten played in San Siro against Roma. I saw last time Van Basten scored, it was in Ancona, and then last time Van Basten played, it was in Munich against Olympique Marseille. And so it was nice, because I was just a kid, and he noticed me and said, okay, take the ticket to see the game. And to go to Ancona is like a 5 or 6 hours train trip, so it was nice from him.
Some of the other players who you've mentioned surprised me a little bit, because Milan have hit the heights, but you've also been relegated a couple of times, and uh-huh. You mentioned Mark Hatley's name, big English striker.
Sure.
And he was a hero.
Yeah, he was a hero. It was not the year we got relegated. That was Joe Jordan in the 1982.
Joe Jordan came from Manchester United.
Yeah. No, but we
84, I think, Joe.
We bought Jordan from, I guess, was playing Man United or Leeds?
He was playing for United. And
Before us?
Yeah, okay. He went from
Leeds to United, then to us.
And because it was like 1.4 million, it was a lot of money, and United just accepted straight away. Joe was the only player in my bedroom on the wall as a kid.
Sure.
I loved him.
He was my hero when I was a kid. I mean, when I was like 9 years old, I guess. And you say Mark Hatley. Yeah, we're really, really, I mean, he's important to us, because he scored a goal against Inter in a derby. We didn't win the derby for like 6 years, and so he scored a goal. We won the derby for 2-1, and so he's still a hero to us. Even he just played for Milan just 3 years, and the first year was really, really good, because he just scored, I guess, like 7 goals in the first 10 games. Then got injured, if I can remember. But yeah, it was that, you know, the last Milan before the Dutch players came and changed our history. Because after Hatley, we got Hatley and Wilkins, which is a Man United glory, isn't it? And
I think Wilkins was the one who went for the most money, actually. I can't remember, but yeah, they both went for a lot of money. Mm. And
after them, we got Van Basten and Gullit. Which are totally different class players, obviously.
This is a Manchester United podcast, but I've got to clear up something. I remember a few days after the Hillsborough disaster,
sure,
watching football midweek. I think it was the semi-finals of the European Cup, when the Milan of Hullet and Van Basten were the best team in the world, and was I really hearing San Siro sing "You'll Never Walk Alone" a few days after?
Sure. Yeah, it was, you know, we pay our respect to the victims of Hillsborough disaster. And, you know, we used to, like Celtic fans do too, we used to sing "You'll Never Walk Alone" until Istanbul.
Really?
Yeah. We used to say all through our year, we were the old Italian team, all supporters, singing "You'll Never Walk Alone." And then when we were beaten by Liverpool in Istanbul, we stopped singing it. And you guess why?
Manchester United used to sing it as well, actually.
Really?
Really. In,
when?
In
when?
The 70s.
In the 70s?
Yeah.
And why it became a Liverpool song? I know that the band...
Yeah,
we're from Liverpool.
Yeah, I think it was from the musical Carousel as well, and it just became, I suppose, to symbolise Liverpool Football Club, and just became their song. But I know that Celtic sing it, and I've heard it before. But that night in San Siro was specifically because of Hillsborough.
Sure.
And how does that start on the curva? Something like that?
Because the, you know, curva is not like what happens, or maybe happened in the English hands. I mean, it's not like spontaneous singing. There's someone, or maybe just two or three guys, starting the chants. So you have to follow them.
They're the leaders.
Yeah, the leaders. And so that day, you know, the funny thing is that there was the minute silence, and during the minute silence, the guy, the leader, starts singing it.
Ah, so it was during the minute silence.
Yeah, it wasn't. Wow. It was something. No, it's different because the referee was supposed to start the minute silence. He forgot to do it, so the game started, and the referee say stop. And after the game started, it was like, okay, now we do the minute silence. So it was not like singing during the minute silence. It was like something mixed together. You know what I mean?
Because and the whole stadium sang it.
Mainly because it's not easy to sing.
It's English, yeah.
It's English. Yeah, it's English. But, you know, for people in the curva, you know, it was easier because everybody knew what, you know, what Cologne was to all the rest of the stadium. But it was not so easy. But, you know, curva is like 10,000 people. So it was lousy. Enough lousy to be heard.
How does Istanbul affect the psyche of Milan as a club? I've just found in my research this week, I came across two opinions which stuck out. Alex Ferguson saying he was watching that game on holiday and he couldn't believe how stupid you were.
Uh-huh.
Roy Keane was watching the game on holiday. Before Keane came to Milan to go on a diet, we already paid a lot of money to basically be told you're not eating any food for 3 days. His mum told him off because he lost all of his weight. But their professional view was, you really fucked it up.
No, we fucked up. But, you know, it's quite crazy to say that. But it was worse for us to win in 2007. Because in 2005 we lost, but we were a great club. And we were still a great club in 2006 and 2007. But when we won in 2007, we should refresh the team because we have great players, but at the end of their, you know, their career, like Inzaghi, like Gattuso, like Pirlo, we have great players, but at the end of their career. And when you win, it takes courage to say, okay, you have to sell these guys and buy other guys. You know what I mean, huh? It's easy to say, okay, we won, we will keep these guys. So I think it was worse. I mean, it was a great achievement, but it was worse for us because we kept all these players for many years. When in 2005 we lost, but we had a great team. And so, I mean, we take our revenge. That's good. I mean...
I'm just opening my computer up here because... United played in Los Angeles a couple of years ago, and I wrote a piece about the fall of AC Milan. And I spoke while I was writing it. I got a message off Jamie Carragher, so I thought, Jamie, can you help me? I'm writing a piece about these games. It was quite interesting what he said about the matches. This is interesting. The 2000 Milan side were better. Their midfield was the key. Pirlo, Gattuso, Seedorf and Kaká. I think the secret to their success was Ancelotti changing the system to a midfield diamond to suit the players. He'd been brought up on the 4-4-2 of Arrigo Sarri. And then Carragher said, we couldn't believe we were even there. We couldn't believe we were on the same pitch as this team at half-time. And then you had this absolute nightmare. But then he says, in 2007, Kaká was much improved, but nobody else was better. No. And we actually looked at that match as a major opportunity missed. We went into the final confident. They didn't have Crespo. They didn't have Shevchenko. And obviously Milan won the game. So I thought that was interesting that he thought the reverse of the actual results of
That's true. Because in 2005, we were a better team, surely. I mean, they just played 7 minutes. But that's football. That's football. In 2007, maybe they were better than us. But we were more hungry, I think.
Touch finally on a couple of sort of fan culture issues. The ultra scene was very popular here. A lot of the casuals in the UK still wear brands that come from this country. CP mm-hmm. Company, Stone Island, Armani. Are they big in Italy? Or is it like loads of people outside the UK love Aqua Scutum and Burberry, but not so much within the country?
Well, Armani is not a brand for ultras. I mean, Armani is an expensive brand at all. It means luxury in Italy. I know you went to have a lunch in a Armani restaurant, and you know it's an expensive place.
I had a bowl of fruit in 2018 in the Armani Hotel, which cost me more than the hostel, yes, hostel, I'd stayed in the night before.
Sure, Armani means luxury in Italy. And Stone Island and PC Company are popular in the ultras community, but not because they are Italian brands, but because they are brands that are used by English firms.
So even though these clothes are from Italy, you look to the English casuals.
Yeah, not me, because I'm outside that. We're from 2005. So,
but younger lads who are into that scene.
Yeah, they know, maybe they don't even know their Italian brands, I think.
And they're made very close to here. And then music. I like the Italian house scene of the late 80s, 90s. That was very big even in Manchester, in the Hacienda. Some of those songs came out of Italy. But I look at your record collection and it's full of English groups and American groups.
Sure.
Is Italy producing its own top music?
Yeah, sure. Genres, yeah? No, for sure. We have a huge music culture in Italy. I have a lot of Italian recordings, and I guess you would like not to listen to. But, but I love music, so obviously I love a lot of English music. That's for sure. I mean, not necessarily coming from Manchester, I'm sorry. Not just coming from Manchester.
And then I feel like I've grown to love Milan as a city. I really like coming here now. I've just cycled right across the city. And a lot of United fans who come here, they just can't understand it. They feel lost when they come here. Are they not seeing the true Milan? Is this a great city, or is it a city of commerce?
No, I think Milan is Milan is like a girl. You have to take your time to know her, you know? It's like if you go to Rome, honestly, not because I'm Italian, but honestly, I think it's the most beautiful city in the world. It's so beautiful. You just get there and you're like, wow. You just, you know, love at the first sight. You know what I mean? Milan is not like this. You have to take your time. You have maybe to feel the kind of vibration it's got. It's a beautiful city too. I suggest everybody coming here to spend two or three days, because you have plenty of places to go, you have plenty of shops to shop, plenty of museum to see. It's near to the sea, it's near to the mountain, near to the lakes. Come here and you will enjoy it. I hope so, at least.
Sounds like you're working for the Milan Tourist Board, but
I really love my city. I mean, it's not like, but you know, it's not like this, because somehow I think Milan is somehow similar to Manchester. I mean, cities, maybe they are not so popular elsewhere, like their capitals, like Rome or London, but they have their own identity, you know? As Manchester is not just famous for football reasons, but you said before, also for music and other reasons. Even Milan is famous elsewhere in the world, because if you think about fashion in Italy, you don't think about Rome, but you think about Milan. If you think about media, you think about Milan, and so on.
And it's still a big fashion place, and all the models still live here.
It's not the side of Milan alive. I love. I mean, I don't love my city, because twice a year you have all these models walking around the streets. But yeah, that's one of the biggest business here, fashion for sure. Because all the labels, famous labels in Italian labels like say Armani, Gucci, Versace, and so on, they are all based here.
And I remember in 2015 going to interview some Juventus players, and I went to watch an away game at Sassuolo.
Okay.
And I waited for them outside the changing rooms, and they all came out in these beautiful suits of Trussardi, I think they were. Uh-huh. And it was striking how well they'd been cut. And I spoke to a friend of mine in the city, and she said, "We know which fashion company supplies each club, so you would know that Milan is with Gucci, for example."
We had Diesel, I think,
yeah,
last year. I'm not sure which we have right now. Eh?
And
we had Diesel.
Yeah, because Paul Pogba wore this suit with training shoes, so that's what I remember. And so did Patrice Evra, and these were the guys who I was taking notice of. And then Paul Pogba ended up coming to Manchester. That is another story, and we'll discuss that another day. I'm going to walk now to the San Siro.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.